From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Andrew Richards.
And I'm David Stevens.
And welcome to Defrag Tools, second part of the IE Developer Tools. Before we jump into that, I got a new tool this week and I thought I just would show it around. The Microsoft Store's selling this. It's the HP Stream 7. And it was $99, but they've reduced it to $79. And it actually even comes with $25 of store credit, so you can use it to buy, you know, store apps and games and stuff. So $79, it's 1 gig of RAM, 32 gig of hard drive space. After installation and stuff, it's 26 gigabytes free, so yeah, fair bit. 4-core Intel Atom processor, x86, so as I said, 1 gig of RAM. So yeah, it runs a bit tight, you know, you bring up just the OS and stuff and a good 600 megabytes out of the gig is used. But if you're just doing mail surfing and, you know, casual games and stuff like that, it works really well. It's got Bluetooth, it's got Wi-Fi, and comes with Office 365 for a year, comes with a terabyte of storage on OneDrive. So yeah, quite a good little deal. And I find I'm just using it to read email. You know, when you're kind of like on the couch rather than having to lug a laptop and stuff. If you haven't got a Surface, for example, which is, you know, a bit more pricey, it's a really good, you know, $79 shipped to you. Can't really complain, right?
For $79, the screen actually looks really good.
Yeah, the color on it is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's not light. I would say, if you know what a 1520 feels like, which is the phablet that we've got, it's probably about, in ratio, more heavier than that. I'm not sure, maybe a pound if that, but you know, definitely something you can hold in your hand. Just has a USB at the top, a micro USB, which you use for charging and for stuff. Front facing camera is a high res, back facing is a high res. Front facing is low res, so it's good for Skype. And you can rip off the back and put an SD card in to get a bit more storage. So
sweet.
I think for $79, that's a bargain, quite frankly. So yeah, just thought I'd show you my new toy. All right, so F12 tools. Last week we kind of went through more of the UI side of things, which was trace logging and trace points and breakpoints. Showed a bit of the DOM Explorer, stuff like that. Now we're going to go a bit more command line-y.
Yep.
And get into console. So tell us all about it.
Cool. Yeah, I'm David Stevens. I'm a PM on the team that makes the F12 tools in Internet Explorer and Visual Studio. And I wanted to share some tips, some features that are really handy in the console today that help make it quicker when you're debugging your websites, and then also some new features we have in Windows 10 that are mostly just little fixes, but taken together make it just nicer to use the console day to day.
So when was the console introduced? I mean, what IE?
Oh gosh,
like ages ago?
Yeah, it's been there a long time, and actually there haven't been a ton of changes to it recently, and so we've been looking into ways we can, you know, I mean, longer lead stuff, but
make it awesome.
Yeah, yeah,
more it awesome. Needs.
Yeah, because it's been awesome. Kind of the way it's been for a while. So
yeah. Well, tried and true things are good things.
They are.
You don't need to touch it for it to still be good.
Yeah.
So you just jump into it.
Cool. So first, I wanted to go through what we kind of think of as the command line API. It's a set of objects and functions that are available when you're in the input buffer of the console in Internet Explorer, but they're not accessible from your script codes. You can't use these when you write an app. They're just useful when you're using the console. So I'll just kind of jump into it here. I have this little website that's incredibly basic. It's just a little color spectrum. I just needed some divs for what I'm about to demo. We can open the tools here, and I'm going to kind of work in the console at the bottom here. Okay, so first thing I wanted to show is how we can make it easy to select elements on the page from the console. So if you wanted to select an element on the page, one way is to use document.getElementById. And there's an element on this page that I know is called redDiv. So I can enter that, and we get this nice HTML formatted result back. I don't know when we introduced this, but it's just a nicer way because so many of the elements you work with on your page are work within the console are HTML, it's nice to get this view instead of a big object tree, although we'll talk about that in a second. But back to the selection thing. So if I think, you know, 80 or 90% of websites use jQuery to select things, and so you know, there's lots of times when I'm writing a site and before I decide to include jQuery in it, I kind of go in the console and want to work with elements on the page, and I reach for that dollar sign But I don't always have jQuery defined. And so this first command line feature I wanted to show is our $API. And what this is it lets me type a CSS selector like you'd expect. So I can say hashtag red div. I know it's not really a hashtag, but I kind of say that in my head, so I went with it. And it does the same thing. And so you can kind of think of it as mini jQuery, but it's just for selectors. It doesn't have any functions on it. So it doesn't have, you know, Ajax or anything like that defined. It's just the selector.
So what if you forget the hash, what happens?
So that would select, it would look for things of type red div. So one way, so like you could say div, and that would select the first div on the page.
So type versus name, okay.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you're familiar with CSS selectors, it uses those. And so now I actually mentioned a second ago that we have this nice HTML formatting, but maybe you'd rather get an object tree view. And so we have another command line API that's dir. And so I can say dir $, I can say red div again. And now I get it formatted as this object graph. You can open this up in the normal console so you can see more of it. And so one thing when I started using the console more, I was clicking these little triangles, but you can double click them to open things, which is in most apps that have this sort of tree view, but it's something I was wasting time on, so maybe there's someone else who wastes time with that too.
Do the left right arrow keys work on your keyboard?
They do.
They do. That's cool.
So that was dir. Now, you notice when I did that example before, I went in and typed all of that selector again. So let me select red div again. So there's a lot of times when you're working in the console that it would be nice to access the last value that you returned. So in this case, this HTML element. And so we have another command line API that's $_ to do just that. So I can say dir, and then I can use $_. Well, I'll show it this way first. So I can say $_, and $_ always binds to the previous return value. So if you're working and you kind of want to work with that last thing you made, maybe you're running some object through a bunch of functions, working with it, it can be a really handy way to do that.
Good way of drilling down to child to child to child, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So now I can say dir $_, and there you go. You get the same thing. Now, one feature, and this is, so I'm going to talk about some more Windows 10 features later, but this one fits in really nicely here in the demo. Say I want to figure out, or I want to look this element up in the DOM Explorer, and I'm working with it. I know I have this thing with the tag red div. It'd be nice to have it selected in the DOM Explorer up here. So instead of having to find it, now in Windows 10 we have a button that's show in DOM Explorer.
Oh, that's cool.
And I can just click on it, and it opens up and highlights it. And if you're more command line oriented, we also have a select.
It's kind of like go to definition, kind of.
Yeah, in a way.
It's more like kind of go to instance, but yeah.
Yeah, so I can say select, and I can send it that last thing I selected. I guess it might be undefined now. So that's the thing about $_ is that it's only the previous thing. So when you evaluate something else, now that previous result is undefined, and so I got an error. So I'm going to go on and show another one, which is double $. And this is an alias for document.query selector all. And so you can select groups of things. So if I wanted to say, get every div on the page, I can say double $ div. And then I get this list, and there's evidently eight ones on the page.
So it's kind of like a for each if you're a C# debug.
You get a group of them, yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Which can be handy, yeah. So I showed how to select that show in DOM Explorer, right-click menu option, and then the select API are useful for going from some element you have in the console to somewhere in the DOM Explorer. But we also have a feature to go the other way. So let's say I'm interested in this div that's green up here. I can just click on it in the DOM Explorer, and then we have a set of objects that are defined, $0 through $4. So we have 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. And so I can evaluate $0, and it evaluates to this green one. So it's the most recently selected thing in the DOM Explorer. And so this kind of completes the circle, because now I can be working in the console and get some JavaScript or some HTML element result and quickly navigate to that in my DOM, but I can also be going through the DOM Explorer and then evaluate something in the console. And so
So what's the 1, 2, 3, 4?
Yeah, so then if I select, so I have green selected now, then if I go select navy, and now when I do $0, it'll be the navy element, and now $1 is the green element, so it goes
so
one back.
It on.
So it's a history of 5 most recently selected elements.
Is there any way to show all 5 elements? Like, you know that it's one of the 5 in the past. Is there any way of saying, show me the 5 that you have cached? Is there, like, asterisks or anything?
I don't believe so, no. I think you'd have to just evaluate all 5 of them at once or something. So there's also, and I'm not going to have time to demo them all today, but there's a whole bunch of extra functions and things on the console object. These aren't really meant as a command line API. They're more so for you to use when you're in the console. They're more meant for you to include in your app, to instrument your app. But one that's kind of handy is console.clear if you want to clear the console right from this like input buffer here. So I think that's sort of everything I had for this command line API.
Is there any concept of aliases or anything that you can make yourself? Not really.
Thanks for reminding me. There's some things to keep in mind with these command line APIs. You can't use them from your app code. So if you try to, if you don't include jQuery or anything else that defines $ and you want to use our $, you can't from your JavaScript files. So what happens when you have jQuery? What happens to our $? And what happens is that objects defined in the page take precedence. And so there's some machinery we have to make sure that happens, and so that's not user accessible. So you can't go defining your own things, but you can definitely go define, there's normal JavaScript things and they all appear here. If they're in your page, you could include it in your page maybe if you wanted and use it that way.
Cool.
Yeah. So, talked about all these. This to select elements. This is select many elements. $_ to get the most previously used thing. $0 through $4 to get recently selected elements in the DOM Explorer. Dir to evaluate elements as an object tree, and then console.clear and other console ones. And I talked about this too, which is coming in Windows 10. It's not in Windows 8 today, but it's a nice little thing. So next, I wanted to go through some message formatting options. I think everyone uses the console first when they learn JavaScript and want to know how to do a printf, and it's like, okay, console.log. But there's a lot of other logging functionality on console that can be really useful, especially if you're debugging an app and have a lot of log messages. So I kind of wanted to go through an example of that and how that can be useful. So what I have is this contrived little example where I say start logging, and then it will start randomly producing these different messages I have from my page. I should refresh that. They gave away my secrets here. So I have this contrived little example. So I say start logging, and there are all these really boring messages. They're all just black text and then a link to where they're being logged from. I'll stop that. But if I go and read all of them, they're actually saying a lot of different things to me. This one says, hey, might want to check this out, boss. This one says, run away, it's going to blow. This one says, there's nothing interesting to report. There's this set of them here where it's going to investigate, and there's multiple phases, and then it concludes it was just a fluke. These are sort of silly, but I'm just trying to illustrate a point here. But the point is that this site is logging a ton of messages, and they all look the same, and you have to go and read all of them, and it's sort of slow. So I can open up the code here. I'm going to change a few things. So instead of console.log, I'm going to do console.info for this one that seems not very serious. This one, I'll say console.warn. This one, I'll say console.error. And I'll show the slide again. These are pretty basic. I think a lot of you probably have heard of these, but don't think to reach for them day to day.
So when was this added, this log versus warning versus error?
I think they've been there
a while.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure, but they're pretty basic. They're in all the other browsers too. They're standard. So now when I start logging, you saw that I'm getting lots of it's a random number generator, so it's not always demo complacent. But I got this blue icon and green text like the standard system ones are, and these ones are red, and this one has a little yellow triangle. So it's just easier to look at this, and immediately your eye goes to where it's red, and it's just a little nicer to look at. Nothing fancy, but just kind of helpful to know that they're there, especially if you're going to write a set of logging infrastructure for your team, maybe, and they're going to be messages that get used a lot, or you're working through some section of code and you're instrumenting it and you're printing out tons and tons of messages, it's worth knowing that these are there.
Does the warning error and information button at the top let you filter it?
Yeah, exactly. So I can do this, and then all the ones that aren't errors are now here, and I can, if I want to just see errors, I can turn everything else off. So this shows errors and also messages. So messages are produced by console.log. So that's where they're coming from.
You can't filter them out?
No, you can't.
Okay. So,
but now we still have all these ones that are grouped, and it would be nice to sort of be able to collapse these because they all come from the same place. So you might have guessed it. That's exactly what we're going to do. I'm just going to uncomment here, make this a little faster. But what I did is I have this section of these five log statements, and so all I do is I bookend them with console.group collapse at the top and console.group end at the end, and then I give this group a name. So I'll save this and then refresh my page. And now I start logging. Random number generator willing.
Come on, 0.8.
There we go. We got one. So you see here, it says standard protocol, which is what I named my group, and it's collapsed by default. I can just double click it to open it up, and there you see all the messages inside. So this is really, really handy as a way just to sort of organize all of this output. And you can just like that.
So if the group has only, say, errors in it, would the standard protocol line get an error icon as well?
I don't believe it does.
You have to roll up it.
Okay. Yeah, you have to dive in.
Feature request, there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
I think I'm overly familiar with the event log and stuff mm-hmm. like that in my train of work. So seeing this, I go, yeah, I've got to filter out the noise. I've got to filter out mm-hmm. the noise.
Exactly.
And show me the critical stuff that's going on. So
exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So get into the habit of doing that. It's much easier to for everybody.
Yeah. There's more in life than just console.log. And so those are sort of the tips I had. And now I want to try and go through a few features we've added recently to the console. The first is that we now log network errors to the console. So if you get a 404 or any other 400 or 500 series network error, they now show up in the console as errors. And they didn't before. And you used to have to go to our network tool in order to see them. And so to demo this, prove that it works, I'm going to go to this site. It's called httpstat.us, HTTP status. Yeah, that's cool. Pretty clever. And what this site lets you do is just type in any error code you want. So I can go to 404, and it sends me two 404s. So you can just see them right here, along with all of my other errors, and filtering works like you'd expect. I can also, you know, try some crazy one, 412 or whatever, a precondition failed. I'm not sure if that's ever appeared in the wild anywhere. 501. Not supported. It's really handy. And I think of the console as having a lot of different, or you know, three or four different jobs, and one of them is a sort of notification center for all of the errors and things from my page. And so this kind of lets it do that for all the different errors you might get, not just JavaScript errors, but also network errors.
So if the request is an asynchronous request, would that still turn up here where the main page is rendering fine and a frame's doing the...
I believe so, yeah.
Cool. Because you might have these pages where you think, why isn't it reacting? And behind the scenes, you've actually got a 404 that...
Yeah. That's the intent.
That's cool.
Just make it one place to look, yeah.
Because before you would have done a Netmon or a Wireshark or was basically a Procmon to achieve that. That's really onerous, really, mm-hmm. comparative just to seeing it basically there.
Yeah.
Do you think that's something that, at the consumer level, you'd worry about? You think if you're on your tech support to your parents and they're saying, well, I can't bring up the page, and you just say, hey, well, press F12 and show me what's on the screen.
It's not a bad idea. And actually, one of the things I was going to mention is that we now log errors even when the dev tools are closed. And so you can pop up and see things that have happened even after or since the page loaded before you launch the dev tools. But in general, there's a lot of stuff going on in the dev tools, and I wouldn't think of these as like a... Or they expose a lot of stuff, and I'd be kind of curious to see like how non-technical people react to all this
overload. Information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
this is nice and clean though. Like it's quite easy to say, tell me, mum, anything that's bright red on the screen that you mm-hmm. see. Just press F12, click console. What do you see? And it gives you a hint maybe what's going mm-hmm. on. You might go, oh, it looks like you've got a bad DNS record or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting. Next one is that we have added locations for where messages are coming from if they're console.logged. Previously, we just had locations for things that were info, warns, and errors, and now we have it for log also. And so I can go back to one of those demos I was given earlier, and we have locations for warnings, but we also now have these links for things that were console.logged. And actually, another feature, there's sort of two things to this, but we shortened the format we use to display the location. So it used to say file, colon, file name, comma, line, colon, line number, and it was getting kind of unwieldy. And so we cleaned it up so it's just the file name and then just an ordered pair of the line number and column number. So
that would be, just going back to the print my code stuff last week, is this going to be the location that print my code's going to show you, or is it going to be the location raw in the file?
Yeah, we have just my code working for this too. And it's smart also for if it's coming from TypeScript, we do that mapping. So it tries to make sure it's the location that you wrote the code in if you're source mapping between languages.
Yep.
So I can just click on this, and it takes me right to that location. We have this little arrow up here that shows exactly where it came from. And so this is handy because today in Internet Explorer, without this feature, sometimes you go to a page and you should get all of these messages being logged. And it's like, well, where are they coming from? And you have to search for the string and everything. So it's just a nice way, and it kind of brings parity between all these different logging functions.
It really brings the debugging experience that you would see in like Visual Studio to the file area.
Yeah,
very good. Very good analogy. A very good parity now.
Yeah, we try to make those as cohesive as possible, and I think.
I think also with the breakpoints and the trace points, that's also very similar now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really good convergence of the two.
Next feature is another just kind of nice little thing, but we made URLs clickable. So here, and this is going to just link me back to that same page I just clicked, but we have a URL in this message. There's nothing special that if you'd written this, there's nothing special you have to do to make it clickable. We just detect them and then make them hyperlinks that you can click. So just a nice little thing, and it's actually kind of nice because this message here comes from the browser letting you know that the code is disabled caching. And before, you just had to copy-paste this and if you wanted to follow the link, but with no extra work, we just turned on the highlighting, and then boom, this message we had for a long time was nice. You can just click on it, and it opens a window, and you can follow the thing. And it's also nice, there's a lot of JavaScript libraries that include URLs for certain error messages to get more information, and so it makes those nicer to use, too, where you don't have to copy and paste. You can just click.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. So we have a bunch more changes. We've been working really hard on the console lately. These aren't quite as easy to demo, so I just go through them verbally. Like I mentioned earlier, we now log messages to the console even when you have the tools closed. So then when you open up, you don't have to refresh the page and go through whatever actions you did. They're right there.
Is there any real limit to how much it logs? As in, is there a big massive buffer, or is it can?
There's a massive buffer. We have some issues around the rate at which they happen. I think right now we truncate at 1,000 messages per second, and we let you know that we're just showing you the first 1,000 messages that occurred in a certain second, and we're working on ways to increase that. And then we also have a buffer around, I think, how long. Let me show you this right. There's another buffer in there too, but so we're working on ways to try and lift those.
You don't want memory bloat maybe it's on Resident Evil 12.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another one is we now have the escape key opening the console when you're in F12. And so if I go to the DOM Explorer and I close the console, now I can push the escape key and open it. I think that was an IE user voice request. And so we implemented that. And then another one is that we have, so if I might currently have focus in the F12 tools, I can now use Control-R to refresh the page. And we didn't before, which was an annoying little paper cut, so we fixed that too. We cleaned up the IntelliSense. So before there were, depending on exactly where you brought up IntelliSense, there would be members that we had in our implementation that were like underscore, underscore, IE, underscore, dev toolbar, underscore, blah, 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 blah. And so now we filter those out because they're erroneous for you to even try to evaluate. And so just makes that a little cleaner. And then this final item here is just sort of a shout out to a bunch of work that we've done in VS to make the JavaScript console in VS when you're writing Apache Cordova apps or mobile device development apps, whatever you want to call them. We brought that JavaScript console in Visual Studio basically to parity with the one in Internet Explorer. So you have IntelliSense, those command line APIs are now available. And so it's just a little, you know, more fluid when you're going back and forth between Visual Studio and Internet Explorer. If that's how you, the tools you're using, it's just a little nicer and you don't have to go back to the browser if you're already in VS to use the JavaScript console. Yeah.
Awesome.
So that's, I guess, all the tips and new features I had to share, but please send feedback. I would love, just send me an email here. Address on the screen. I guess I won't try to pronounce my
alias. Also, we'll put it down in the show notes as
okay,
well,
cool.
So you can click on it.
And there's also the IE User Voice site. We read through those as well, and it's really helpful to us to, you know, hear what you want and then ideas for new features or especially, you know, fixes to things that are, annoying you today. I know a bunch of these features, actually, I've heard from MVPs and people on the IE User Voice and other places. We really take that seriously, so please contribute anything, and we read them all. So
awesome. Well, thank you, David, for popping in and finishing off the F12 tools for us.
Absolutely.
As always, put your comments in the show notes. David will peruse those, much like Andy will do last week's as well. Comments below. As always, you can email us at defragtools@microsoft.com. If you may or may have not noticed, we actually missed some weeks. So we actually ran 125 weeks without missing a week, and we were, you know, taping lots in advance, and so we could get over build and vacations of the studio and stuff. We've actually got to the point where Chad and I are kind of exhausted what we know at the level that we want to present stuff. And so we're actually gonna have gaps between runs of episodes and to build up the level of knowledge that we want, rather than giving you something that's a little bit lower quality than we would like to. So expect to see this type of scenario where we'll get a guest in or we'll have a new topic for 1 or 2 weeks, maybe 3 or 4 weeks, and then a 2 or 3 week gap so that Chad and I can build up our knowledge or find the new resources. And so don't give up, we are still in the air. Kind of think of it as like the Defrag show where Gove and Larry come in at an irregular cadence, but keep tuned, put us in your RSS feed, and we will see you sometime in the future. So see you in a couple of weeks. Have a good week.